The whole canto focuses on Krishna and is really the bulk of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Before Prabhupada got to it, while he was translating the sequence, he did a kind of summary of the 10th canto in the little book form called Krishna the Supreme Krishna the Godhead. I'm going to read from that about Krishna's appearance. This is what Prabhupada puts us in the introduction. I was thinking of chanting this morning. I didn't know it was here. Krishna, 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 hey. And then Krishna, 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 Lakshavam. Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Adimam, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Raksharanam, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Adimam, in the Chantist one, in the Matrita, that was run by the priest. Okay, chapter 1, the advent of Lord Krishna. Once the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of different kings who were actually demons, but who were posing themselves as the royal order. At that time, the whole world became perturbed, and the predominating deity of this earth, known as Bhumi, went to see Lord Brahma to tell of her calamities due to the demoniac kings. Bhumi assumed the shape of a cow and presented herself before Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. She was bereaved and was weeping just to invoke the Lord's compassion. She related the calamitous position of the earth, and after hearing this, Lord Brahma became much aggrieved, and he at once started for the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu resides. Lord Brahma was accompanied by all the demigods, headed by Lord Shiva, and Bhumi also followed. Arriving on the shore of the milk ocean, Lord Brahma began to pacify Lord Vishnu, who had formerly saved the earth planet by assuming the transcendental form of her boar. In the Vedic mantras, there is a particular type of prayer called Purusha Sukta. Generally, the demigods offer their obeisances unto Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by chanting the Purusha Sukta. It is understood herein that the predominating deity of every planet can see the Supreme Lord of this universe, Brahma, whenever there is some disturbance on his planet. And Brahma can approach the Supreme Lord Vishnu, not by seeing him directly, but by standing on the shore of the ocean of milk. There is a planet within this universe called Svetadvipa. And on that planet, there is an ocean of milk. It is understood from various Vedic literatures that just as there is an ocean of salt water on this planet, there are various kinds of oceans on other planets. Somewhere, there is an ocean of milk somewhere. There's an ocean of oil. Somewhere there are oceans of liquor and many other types of liquids. The Purusha Sukta is the standard prayer which the demigods recite to appease the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shirodakshayi Vishnu. Because he is lying on the ocean of milk, he is called Shirodakshayi Vishnu. That is, Shira means milk, Kudaka means lying. Udaka means ocean. Shira, Udaka, Shai, lying on the ocean of milk. Shirodakshayi Vishnu. There's also Karanaranabhashayi Vishnu, Agarbhadakshayi Vishnu. There's three oceans. This is Shirodakshayi Vishnu. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through whom all the incarnations within this universe appear. After all the demigods offered the Purusha Sukta prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they apparently heard no response. Then Lord Brahma personally sat in meditation, and there was a message transmission from Lord Vishnu to Brahma. Brahma then broadcast the message to the demigods. That is the system of receiving Vedic knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is received first. The Vedic knowledge is received first by Brahma from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the heart. As stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tehe Brahma Vidaya Adi Kavaye. The transcendental knowledge is of the Vedas was transmitted to Lord Brahma through the heart. Here also, the same way, only Brahma could understand the message transmitted by Lord Vishnu, and he broadcast it to the demigods for their immediate action. The message was this: the Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear on the earth very soon, along with his supreme powerful potencies, and as long as he remained on the earth planet to execute his mission of annihilating the demons and establishing the devotees, the demigods should also remain there to assist him. They should all immediately take birth in the family of the Yadu dynasty, wherein the Lord would also appear in due course of time. The Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Krishna, would personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Before his appearance, all the demigods, along with their wives, should appear in different pious families in the world just to assist the Lord in executing his mission. The exact word used here is Chatriyantam, which means the demigods should appear on the earth in order to please the Lord. In other words, any living entity who lives only to satisfy the Lord is a demigod. The demigods were further informed that the plenary portion of Lord Krishna, Ananta, who is maintaining the universal planets by extending his millions of hoods, would also appear on earth before Lord Krishna's appearance. They were also informed that the external potency of Vishnu, Maya, with whom all the conditioned souls are enamored, would also appear by the order of the Supreme Lord just to execute his purpose. After instructing and pacifying all the demigods as well as Bhumi with sweet words, Lord Brahma, the father of all Prajapatis, or progenitors of universal population, departed for his abode, the highest material planet, called Brahmaloka. The leader of the Yadu dynasty, King Shurasena, was ruling over the country known as Mathura, wherein lies the city of Mathura. Oh, I see. The country is Mathura, with a long A in the beginning and a short A in the end, and the city is Mathura. Mathura, we say Mathura. Go there. K. King Surasena was ruling over the country known as Mathura, wherein lies the city of Mathura, as well as the district known as Surasena, which was named after him. On account of the ruler of King Surasena, Mathura became the capital city of all the kings of the Yadus. Mathura was also made the capital of the kings of the Yadu dynasty, because the Yadus were a very pious family and knew that Mathura is the place where Lord Krishna lives eternally, just as he also lives in Dwarka. Once upon a time, Vasudeva, the son of Surasena, just after marrying Devaki, was going home on his chariot with his newly wedded wife. The father of Devaki, known as Devata, had contributed a sufficient dowry, because he was very affectionate toward his daughter. He had contributed hundreds of chariots, completely decorated with gold equipment. At that time, Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, in order to please his sister, Devaki, had voluntarily taken the reins of the horses of Vasudeva's chariot and was driving. According to the custom of the Vedic civilization, when a girl is married, the brother takes the sister and brother-in-law to their home. Because the newly married girl may feel too much separation from her father's family, the brother goes with her until she reaches the father-in-law's house. The full dowry contributed by Devaka was as follows: 400 elephants, fully decorated with golden garlands, 15,000 decorated horses, and 1,800 chariots. He also arranged for 200 beautiful girls to follow his daughter. The Kshatriya system of marriage, still current in India, dictates that when a Kshatriya is married, a few dozen of the bride's young girlfriends, in addition to the bride, go to the house of the king. The followers of the queen are called maidservants, but actually they act as friends of the queen. This practice is prevalent from time immemorial, traceable at least to the time before the advent of Lord Krishna, 5,000 years ago. So Vasudeva brought home another 200 beautiful girls along with his wife, Devaki. When the bride and the bridegroom were passing along on the chariot, there were different kinds of musical instruments playing to indicate the auspicious moment. There were conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums. Combined together, they were vibrating a nice concert. The procession was passing very pleasingly, and Kamsa was driving the chariot when suddenly there was a miraculous sound vibrated from the sky, which especially announced to Kamsa, "Kamsa, you are such a fool. You are driving the chariot of your sister and your brother-in-law, but you do not know that the eighth child of this sister will kill you." Kamsa was the son of Ugrasena of the Bhoja dynasty. It is said that Kamsa was the most demoniac of all the Bhoja dynasty kings. Immediately after hearing the prophecy from the sky, he caught hold of Devaki's hair and was just about to kill her with his sword. Vasudeva was astonished at Kamsa's behavior, and in order to pacify the cruel, shameless brother-in-law, he began to speak as follows, with great reason and evidence. He said, "My dear brother-in-law, Kamsa, you are the most famous king of the Bhoja dynasty, and people know that you are a great warrior and a valiant king. How is it that you are so infuriated that you are preparing to kill a woman who is your own sister at this auspicious time of her marriage. Why should you be so much afraid of death? Death is already born along with your birth. From the very day you took your birth, you began to die. Suppose you're 25 years old. That means you have already died 25 years. Every moment, every second, you are dying. Why then should you be so much afraid of death? Final death is inevitable. You may die either today or in 100 years. You cannot avoid death. Why should you be so much afraid? Actually, death means annihilation of the present body. As soon as this present body stops functioning and mixes with the five elements of material nature, the living entity within the body accepts another body according to his present action and reaction. It's just like a man walking on the street. He puts forward his foot, and when he's confident that his foot is situated on solid ground, he lifts the other foot. In this way, one after another, the bodies change and the soul transmigrates. See how the plant worms change from one twig to another so carefully. Similarly, the living entity changes his body. As soon as the higher authorities decide on his next body, as long as the living entity is conditioned within this material world, he must take material bodies one after another. His next particular body is offered by the laws of nature according to the actions and reactions of this life. This body is exactly like one of the bodies which we always see in dreams. During our dream of sleep, we create so many bodies according to mental creation. We have seen gold. We have also seen the mountain. So in a dream, we can see a golden mountain by combining the two ideas. Sometimes in a dream, we see that we have a body which is flying in the sky, and at that time, we completely forget our present body. Similarly, these bodies are changing. When you have one body, you forget the past body. During a dream, we make contact with so many new kinds of bodies, but when we are awake, we forget them all. And actually, these material bodies are the creations of our mental activities. But at the present moment, we do not recollect our past bodies. The nature of the mind is flickering. Sometimes it accepts something, and it immediately rejects the same thing. Accepting and rejecting is the process of the mind in contact with the five objects of sense gratification: form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. In its speculative way, the mind comes in touch with the objects of sense gratification. And when the living entity desires a particular type of body, he gets it. Therefore, the body isn't offered by the laws of material nature. The living entity accepts a body and comes out again in the material world to enjoy or suffer according to the construction of the body. Unless we have a particular type of body, we cannot enjoy or suffer according to our mental proclivities inherited from our previous life. The particular type of body is actually offered to us according to our mental condition at the time of death. The luminous planets like the sun, moon, and stars reflect themselves in different types of reservoirs like water, oil, or ghee. The reflection moves according to the movement of the reservoir. The reflection of the moon on the water and the moving water make the moon also appear to be moving, but actually the moon is not moving. Similarly, by mental concoction, the living entity attains different kinds of bodies, although actually he has no connection with such bodies. But on account of illusion, being enchanted by the influence of Maya, the living entity thinks that he belongs to a particular type of body. That is the way of conditioned life. Suppose a living entity is now in a human form of body. he thinks he belongs to the human community, or a particular country, or a particular place. He identifies himself in that way, and unnecessarily prepares for another body, which is not required by him. Such desires, mental concoctions, are the cause of different types of bodies. The covering influence of material nature is so strong that the living entity is satisfied in whatever body he gets, and he identifies with that body with great pleasure. Therefore, I beg to request you not to be overwhelmed by the depletion of your mind and body. Vasudeva thus requested Kamsa not to be envious of his newly married sister. One should not be envious of anyone, because envy is the cause of fear both in this world and in the next. When one is before Yamaraj, the lord of punishment after death, Vasudeva appealed to Kamsa on behalf of Devaki, stating that she was his younger sister. He also appealed at an auspicious moment, the time of marriage. A younger sister or brother is supposed to be protected as one's child. The position is overall so delicate, Vasudeva reasoned, that if you kill her, it will go against your high reputation. This way, Vasudeva tried to pacify Kamsa by good instruction as well as by philosophical discrimination, but Kamsa was not to be pacified because his association was demoniac. Because of his demoniac associations, he was a demon, although born in a very high royal family. A demon never cares for any good instruction. He's just like a determined thief. One can give him moral instruction, but it will not be effective. Similarly, those who are demoniac or atheistic by nature can hardly assimilate any good instruction, however authorized it may be. That is the difference between demigod and demon. Those who can accept good instruction and try to live their lives in that way are called demigods, and those who are unable to take such good instruction are called demons. Failing his attempt to pacify Kamsa, Vasudeva wondered how he would protect his wife. When there is imminent danger, an intelligent person should try to avoid the dangerous position as far as possible. But if, in spite of endeavoring by all intelligence, one fails to avert the dangerous position, there's no fault on his part. One should try his best to execute his duties, but if the attempt fails, he's not at fault. Vasudeva thought of his wife as follows. For the present, let me save the life of Devaki. Then later on, if there are children, I shall see how to save them. He further thought, if in the future I get a child who can kill Kamsa, just as Kamsa is thinking, then both Devaki and the child will be saved, because the law of providence is inconceivable. But now, some way or other, let me save the life of Devaki. There is no certainty how a living entity contacts a certain type of body, just as there is no certainty in how a blazing fire comes in contact with a certain type of wood in the forest. When there's a forest fire, it is experienced that the blazing fire sometimes leaps over one tree and catches another by the influence of the wind. Similarly, a living entity may be very careful in the matter of executing his duty, but it is still very difficult for him to know what type of body he is going to get in the next life. Maharaj Bharata was very faithfully executing the duties of self-realization, but by chance he developed temporary affection for a deer, and in his next life he had to accept the body of a deer. Vasudeva, after deliberating on how to save his wife, began to speak to Kamsa with great respect, although Kamsa is the most sinful man. Sometimes it happens that a most virtuous person like Vasudeva has to flatter a person like Kamsa, a most vicious man. This is the way of all diplomatic transactions. Although Vasudeva was deeply aggrieved, he smiled outwardly. He addressed the shameless Kamsa in that way because he was so atrocious. Vasudeva said to Kamsa, "My dear brother, please consider that you have no danger from your sister. You are awaiting some danger because you have heard a prophetic voice in the sky. But the danger is to come from the sons of your sister, who are not present now. And who knows? There may or may not be sons in the future. Considering all this, you are safe for the present. Nor is there cause for fear from your sister. If there are any sons born of her, I promise that I shall present all of them to you with necessary attention." Kamsa knew the value of Vasudeva's word of honor, and he was convinced by his argument. For the time being, he desisted from the heinous killing of his sister. Thus Vasudeva was pleased and praised the decision of Kamsa. In this way, he returned to his home. That's okay. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki gave birth to a child. Thus she gave birth to 8 male children as well as 1 daughter. When the first son was born, Vasudeva kept his word of honor and immediately brought the child before Kamsa. It is said that Vasudeva was very much elevated and famous for his word of honor, and he wanted to maintain this thing. Although it is very painful for Vasudeva to hand over the newly born child, Kamsa was very glad to receive him. But he became a little compassionate with the behavior of Vasudeva. This event is very exemplary for a great soul like Vasudeva. There is nothing considered to be painful in the course of discharging one's duty. A learned person like Vasudeva carries out his duties without hesitation. On the other hand, a demon like Kamsa never hesitates in committing any abominable action. It is said, therefore, that a saintly person can tolerate all kinds of miserable conditions of life. A learned man can discharge his duties without awaiting favorable circumstances. And a heinous person like Kamsa can act in any sinful way. And a devotee can sacrifice everything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kamsa became satisfied by the action of Vasudeva. He was surprised to see Vasudeva keeping his promise and being compassionate upon him. And pleased, he began to speak as follows, "My dear Vasudeva, you need not present this child to me. I am not in any danger from this child. I have heard that the 8th child born of you and Devaki will kill me. Why should I accept this child unnecessarily? You can take him back." When Vasudeva was returning home with his firstborn child, although he was pleased by the behavior of Kamsa, he could not believe in him because he knew that Kamsa was uncontrolled. An atheistic person cannot be firm in his word of honor. One who cannot control the senses cannot be steady in his determination. The great politician Chanakya Pandit said, "Never put your trust in a diplomat or a woman." Actually, it's a Rajakula in a prince. But the woman is there. Those who are addicted to unrestricted sense gratification can never be truthful, nor can they be trusted with any faith. At that time, the great sage Narada came to Kamsa. He was informed of Kamsa's becoming compassionate to Vasudeva and returning his firstborn child. Narada was very eager to accelerate the descent of Lord Krishna as soon as possible. He therefore informed Kamsa that in Vrindavan, personalities like Nanda Maharaj and all the other cowherd men and their wives, and on the other side Vasudeva, his father Shurasena, and all his relatives born in the family of Vishnu of the Yadu dynasty, along with all their friends and well-wishers, were actually demigods. Narada warned Kamsa to be careful of them, since Kamsa and his friends and advisors were all demons. Demons are always afraid of demigods. After being thus informed by Narada about the appearance of the demigods in different families, Kamsa at once became very much alarmed. He understood that since the demigods had already appeared, Lord Vishnu must be coming soon. He at once arrested both his brother-in-law Vasudeva and Devaki and put them behind prison bars. Within the prison, shackled in iron chains, Vasudeva and Devaki gave birth to a male child year after year in Kamsa, thinking each of the babies to be the incarnation of Vishnu, killed them one after another. He was particularly afraid of the eighth child, but after the visit of Narada, he came to the conclusion that any child might be Krishna. Therefore, it was better to kill all the babies who took birth from Devaki and Vasudeva. This action of Kamsa is not very difficult to understand. There are many instances in the history of the world of persons in the royal order who have killed their father, brother, or whole families and friends for the satisfaction of their ambitions. There is nothing astonishing about this, for members of the demoniac, greedy royal order can kill anyone for their nefarious ambitions. Kamsa was made aware of his previous birth by the grace of Narada. He learned that in his previous birth he had been a demon of the name Kalanini, and that he had been killed by Vishnu. Having now taken his birth in the Bhoja family, he decided to become the deadly enemy of the Yadu dynasty. Krishna was going to take birth in that family. Kamsa was very much afraid that he would be killed by Krishna, just as he had been killed in his last birth. He first of all imprisoned his father, Ugrasena, because he was the chief king among the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andhaka dynasties. And he also occupied the kingdom of Ugrasena, Vasudeva's father. He declared himself the king of all such places. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purport of the first chapter of Krishna, the advent of Lord Krishna. Questions.
There are people like Kamsa today.
Yeah, still. They may not be the royal order, but they're politicians.
And they have all these fears. Mm-hmm. Like you hear about down in South America, they have farms where they grow, they harvest fortunes for.
Yeah. It's going on. They can go forward or backwards.
Yeah.
need a little motor on here. That, no, see, it's way up high. You can't get there. Yeah, way up there. Yeah. Just give this chair a push here. Thank you.
This time of year, so. Of course, there's a backstory. There's more detail. The six sons of Devaki who were killed, and the mission that their consul is calling me. Those six babies were his own sons in the previous life. And they had been, and they were there. They, before that, they had been the sons of Mahiki and were cursed to go through this.
They
were
still in
the cow.
Maybe
they
stole
the
cow or something like that.
I don't know what they did. It was more complicated. They criticized Lord Brahma, actually. They were cursed and they took this bird. There's a whole backstory. Then there's a symbolic meaning, too, because Marichi, the sage Marichi, is born of Brahma's mind, so he represents the mind. And the six children represent Kama, Lobha, Krodha, Mada, Masara, and fear. The six children of the mind: lust, anger, greed, illusion, insanity, and anger. Yeah, anger and fear. These six. And so there's a symbolic meaning also, because Devaki is a devotee and her fear of Kamsa symbolically means being afraid of entanglement in the material world. And because of her fear, she was one after another purified of these childish tears. She's purified of this bad quality. They all think fear is one. She is purified. And then Lord Balaram, as you'll see, there's something where Lord Balaram first appears as in the womb of Devaki and is transferred. He prepares the way for Krishna, and Krishna appears. So, chapter 2. Prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. King Kamsa, not only occupied, now we've got time to think more about his politics. King Kamsa, well, what did he do already? He imprisons his own father, who was the king, put him in jail. And then his father was Uttarasena, and then Surasena, father of Vasudeva, conquered his kingdom, took over that. King Kamsa not only occupied the kings of Yadu, Bhojan, and the Gadanastis in the kingdom of Surasena, but he also made alliances with all the other demonic kings as follows. The demon Palamba, demon Vakra, demon Chanurana, demon Chinavarta, demon Agasura, demon Mushtika, demon Arista, demon Dhrivida, demon Putana, demon Keshi, and demon Venuka. At that time, Jarasandha was the king of Magadha province, known as Bihar. So, thus, by his diplomatic policy, Kamsa consolidated the most powerful kingdom of his time under the protection of Jarasandha. He made further alliances with such kings as Vanasura and Bhaumasura until he was the strongest. Then he began to behave most inimically toward the Yadu dynasty, into which Krishna was to take his birth. Being harassed by Kamsa, the king of the Yadu, Bhojan, and the kings of the other Bhojan and other dynasties began to take shelter in different states. And during the exile, such as the state of the Kurus, the state of the Panchalas, and the states known as Kekaya, Shalva, Vibhava, Vishadha, Vidya, and Kushala. Kamsa broke the solidarity of the other kingdom, as well as the Bhoja and Andhaka. He made his position the most solid within the vast tract of land known at that time as Bharatvarsha. For when King Kamsa was killing the six babies of Devaki in Vasudeva one after another, many friends and relatives of Kamsa approached him and requested him to discontinue these heinous activities, but all of them became worshipers. That is the turn around. When Devaki became pregnant for the seventh time, a plenary expansion of Krishna, known as Ananta, appeared within her womb. Devaki was overwhelmed with both jubilation and lamentation. She was joyful, for she could understand that Lord Krishna had taken shelter within her womb. But at the same time, she was sorry that as soon as her child would come out, Kamsa would kill him. At that time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, being compassionate upon the others, who were fearful due to the atrocities committed by Kamsa, ordered the appearance of Yoga Maya, his internal potency. Krishna is the Lord of the universe, but he is especially the Lord of the Yadu dynasty. Yoga Maya is the principal potency of the personality of Godhead. In the Vedas, it is stated that the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has multi potencies. Purasya Shaktir Nididaiva Shurika. All the different potencies are acting externally and internally, and Yoga Maya is the chief of all potencies. The Lord ordered the appearance of Yoga Maya in the land of Rajbhumi in Vrindavan, which is already always decorated and full with beautiful cows. In Vrindavan, Rohini, one of the wives of Vasudeva, one of the wives of Vasudeva was residing at the house of King Nanda and Queen Yashoda. Not only Rohini, but many others of the Yadu dynasty were scattered all over the country due to their fear of the atrocities of Kamsa. Some of them were even living in the caves of the mountains. The Lord thus informed Yoga Maya, under the imprisonment of Kamsa are Devaki and Vasudeva, and at the present moment my plenary expansion initiation is within the womb of Devaki. You can arrange the transfer of Shesha from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. After this arrangement, I am personally going to appear in the womb of Devaki with my full potencies. Then I shall appear as the son of Devaki and Vasudeva. And you shall appear as the daughter of Nanda and Yashoda and Vrindavan. Since you will appear as my contemporary sister, and since you will quickly satisfy desires for sense gratification, people within the world will worship you with all kinds of valuable presentations, incense, candles, flowers, offerings of sacrifice. People who are after materialistic perfection will worship you under different forms of your expansions, which will be named Durga, Vajrakali, Jaya, Vaishnavi, Durga, Chandika, Krishna, Madhavi, Kanyaka, Maya, Narayani, Ishani, Sharada, and Sandhika. Krishna and Yogamaya appeared as brother and sister, the supreme powerful and the supreme power. Although there is no clear distinction between the powerful and the power, power is always subordinate to the powerful. Those who are materialistic are worshippers of the power, but those who are transcendentalists are worshippers of the powerful. Krishna is the supreme powerful, and Durga is the supreme power within the material world. Actually, people in the Vedic culture worship both the powerful and the power. There are many hundreds and thousands of temples of Vishnu and Devi, and sometimes they are worshipped simultaneously. The worshippers of the powers, Durga, or the external energy of Krishna, may achieve all kinds of material success very easily, but anyone who wants to be elevated transcendentally must engage in worshipping the powerful in Krishna consciousness. The Lord also declared to Yogamaya, "My plenary expansion, Ananta Shesha, is within the womb of Devaki. On account of being forcibly attracted to the womb of Rohini, he will be known as Shankarsha and will be the source of all spiritual power from birth, by which one can attain the highest bliss of life, which is called Brahma. Therefore, the plenary portion, Ananta, will be known after his appearance either as Shankarsha or as Balarama." In the Upanishads, it is stated, "Nayam Atma Bala Jnana Labhyaha." The purport is that one cannot attain the supreme platform of self-realization without being sufficiently favored by Balarama. Bala does not mean physical strength. No one can attain spiritual perfection by physical strength. One must have the spiritual strength which is infused by Balarama or Shankarsha. Ananta or Shesha is the power which sustains all the planets in their different positions. Materially, the sustaining power is known as the law of gravitation. But actually, it is a display of the potency of Shankarsha. Balarama or Shankarsha is spiritual power, or the original spiritual master. Therefore, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who is also the incarnation of Balarama, is the original spiritual master. And the spiritual master is the representative of Balarama, the supreme personality of Godhead, who supplies spiritual strength. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is confirmed that the spiritual master is the manifestation of the mercy of Krishna. Thus ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya circumambulated the Lord and appeared within this material world according to his order. When Yogamaya, the supreme power of the supremely powerful personality of Godhead, transferred Lord Shesha from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini, both Devaki and Rohini were under Yogamaya's spell, which is called Yoga Nidra. Nidra means sleep. When this was done, people thought that Devaki's seventh pregnancy had been miscarriage. Thus, although Balarama appeared as the son of Devaki, he was transferred to the womb of Rohini to appear as her son. After this event, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is always ready to protect his unalloyed devotee, entered within the mind of Vasudeva as the Lord of the whole creation, with full, inconceivable potency within the mind of Vasudeva. It is understood in this connection that Lord Krishna, first of all, situated himself in the unalloyed part of Vasudeva, part of Mahavishnu, And it was transferred to the heart of Devaki, who was not put into the womb of Devaki by seminal discharge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His inconceivable potency, can appear in any way. It is not necessary for Him to appear in the ordinary way by seminal conception within the womb of a woman. When Vasudeva was sustaining the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, within His heart He appeared just like the glowing sun, whose shining rays are always unbearable and scorching to the common man. The form of the Lord, situated in the pure, unalloyed heart of Vasudeva, is not different from the original form of Krishna. The appearance of the form of Krishna anywhere, specifically within the heart, is called dhan. Dhan refers not only to Krishna's form, but also to His name, His qualities, and His paraphernalia. Everything becomes manifest simultaneously. Thus the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with full potency, was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki, exactly as the setting sun's rays are transferred to the full moon rising in the east. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thus entered the body of Devaki from the body of Vasudeva without being subject to any of the conditions of an ordinary living. Since Krishna was there, it is to be understood that all His plenary expansions, such as Narayana, and incarnations like Lord Vishnu and Varaha, were with Him, and they also were not subject to the conditions of material existence. In this way, Devaki became the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second, and the cause of all creation. Devaki became the residence of the Absolute Truth, but because she was confined within the house of Kamsa, she looked just like a suppressed fire, or like misused education. When fire is kept in a jug, the illuminating rays of fire cannot be very much appreciated. Similarly, misused knowledge, which does not benefit people, is not very appreciated. So Devaki was kept within the prison walls of Kamsa Palace, and no one could see her transcendental beauty, which resulted from her conceiving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kamsa, however, will continue. So since we're fasting, one thing can be taken after we leave, we can read a little more.